And now, the Corner Office. Political press attaché Joe Dellerone gets in-depth on the issues with Grand Chief Joe Tuquiro Norton.
This time around, we are happy to bring back once again Grand Chief Joseph Tuquiro Norton, who has been very hard at work making everybody else hard at work, because this has been a very extremely busy time, good, bad, and otherwise. It's been busy. So now as we get into early December now, and we head toward, I guess, a little bit of a break, not much is slowing down. There's still lots going on. You have meetings coming up. The Assembly of First Nations has its usual early December meetings. What's coming up next week?
Well, next week is going to be busy. As a matter of fact, going to be in Ottawa on Sunday, kick off the week. The 7th is a one-day session with the Iroquois Caucus, and then on Monday, the 7th, there's kind of an overlap in meeting schedules, because there's the Quebec chiefs that want to meet for about a 2-3 hour period on Monday evening, and then also Grand Chief Ava Hill from Six Nations has also called for a separate meeting on the 7th too. So everybody's sort of in a bind. What are we going to do, and where are we going to go? We'll sort that out one way or another. Then the AFN begins on the 8th to the 10th. That's going to be busy. It's going to be a bit of an eye opener for a lot of people. A new government sitting in the House of Parliament, and we did meet. I was at the Assembly here in July in Montreal, but it was the same government, same situation, same circumstances as before. So I guess we're looking forward to some uplifting changes. We hope that'll come about.
One of them may be that the new Prime Minister Trudeau will—he's been invited, and quite often the Prime Minister has spoken. Harper, however, hasn't been very over the past several years. Did not appear, and there was a confrontational relationship, not only with Ganawaga and the Mohawks, but really across Indian country, as they call it. So we've talked about this before. Everybody hoping for a new era.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that have happened. I mean, most everybody, unless you've been hiding under a rock somewhere, knows that there's a new government, and the declarations that have been made, campaign promises that have been given, and then the government now in position, and the Prime Minister has committed to do a number of very, if you want to call them, inspiring and encouraging things to help the relationships. And he's moved ahead by appointing cabinet ministers, a native in particular, the Minister of Justice.
Wilson Raybould.
Yeah, Wilson Raybould. And someone who's been familiar with the native file in the Department of now Indigenous Aboriginal Affairs. What is her name? The new minister.
Yes, what's her name? We've talked to her a thousand times.
Yeah. Anyway, she's a breath of fresh air, if you want to call it that. Yeah, but we'll see as time goes on what's going to happen.
Is there a chance, do you think, that if the Prime Minister shows up, that there will be an announcement on the missing and murdered women?
I believe so. I think there's already been moves that have been made, from what I read to in the newspapers and heard on the radio and TV, that they're moving in that direction. The orders have been given, you know, to start formalizing and organizing, so that from what I understand, the Prime Minister will be there next week, and will be, I don't know what day he's scheduled, probably part of the opening ceremonies, to make an official statement and go from there. So I mean, there's no reason why he wouldn't. It's the seat of government. Everything is right there. Everybody's there. Chiefs from across Canada will be in the house. So it's made to order.
All eyes will be in Ottawa, and you'll be there. Chief Clinton Phillips will be there. There's some environmental issues on the agenda. Chief Gina Deer will be there.
Gina Deer will also be there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a busy time. You've been meeting with the Quebec chiefs quite frequently of late as well. First question I have is Ghislain Picard going to be continuing to serve as the regional chief? Because a couple of years ago there was talk, and he was the one who said it, well, I guess I'm getting a little tired, I'm getting run down, but looks like more than anything, he's been re-energized.
Is he staying on? Did you talk to him?
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, he made it known to all the chiefs that he will be running for office again. An election has been called in the new year, in January, early in the new year. I forget what the date is, but he's already made it known that he's submitting his candidacy and looking forward to continuing on. And I believe it's a good good move. He's the person for this time. That's what it is. And he's in recent months, he's really gotten more, shall we say, aggressive in his approach and in his speak and the things that he's been pursuing.
I actually have to say that this is the most impressive he's ever been.
Well, it takes time. I mean, in the circumstances that he was in, as any other, as they're known, regional vice chief across the country, they kind of have to almost play a neutral role because they represent, you know, their constituents, for lack of a better term, or the members of the organization from the various nations. But at some point in time, some of them have to become very bold, you know, and speak up and push the chiefs in a direction that where there's common good everybody's seeking. And this is one of those times, and I could see it in him. He's got his act together, and he's doing quite well.
Speaking of the chiefs, Quebec, what's the biggest challenge right now? I know there were meetings on specific issues. Mm-hmm. We had the incident up in northern Quebec there, but the relationship between First Nations and the province, it's always having that ebb and flow and you know, heights and valleys, etc. Where are we at there?
In my observations, I think the biggest challenge, which has always been the challenge, is first and foremost the unification amongst the various nations in Quebec. Not that we're far apart and what have you, but we're kind of isolated from each other, and we have to do things on our own. And the biggest challenge to me is pulling that all together and utilizing our experience, our knowledge, and our strength, and the power that we have, understanding that we do have powers. And the power is we own the land. Power is that we have our own jurisdictions, we have our own authorities. It's a question of being able to, amongst ourselves, agree, and then stepping forth with Quebec, stepping forward with Canada, and saying to them, this is who we are, this is what we are, this is our territory, nobody's gonna break it up, nobody's gonna separate, nobody's gonna do all these things. You wanna come in, you wanna exploit, you wanna look at the natural resource and all that, well, you gotta talk to us first, first and foremost. That's what I'm trying to, along with Ghislain Picard and other chiefs in Quebec who are very vocal and prominent, that's what we're trying to instill in everybody. There's a lot of strength there. There's a lot of spirit, and there's a way that we can, I like to demonstrate it this way. Quebec is here, or at least we've always looked at Quebec being here. Some have, and we're down here, and we're trying to get up to where they're at. Well, in actuality, it's the other way around. We're up here. We're talking about nationhood. We're talking about our territories. We're talking about our citizenship. We're talking about all those things that make us what we are. Quebec is here, and we're pulling them. You know, kicking and screaming, we're pulling them up to that level. And that's the best way I could describe it. And everybody looked at that and said, yeah, you know, that's the way it is.
Well, Ghislain Picard, when he mentioned that he was a sovereigntist, a lot of the sovereigntists in Quebec lost their minds, thought that was the greatest thing. But then he explained that, well, I'm an Innu sovereigntist, so a little interesting. All right, let's bring it back home a little bit here. It was just this week, within the last day or so, we've heard about the action that's being taken by the Center for Race Relations by certain people who are not happy with Ganawaga in terms of the membership law, residency issues. Then they went to the Human Rights Commission.
Yeah.
And basically now we got that letter. What can you tell us?
Well, I don't like to use the term muzzled, but there's a legal muzzle that we've been asked to put on, and not to say too much may prejudice the case, one way or another. Not only the human rights case, but the lawsuit. But on the other hand, we're a transparent community. We want to know what's going on. People need to know what's going on in order that they may have a level of comfort that things are happening and we are defending, and we are going to protect the rights of those people that we consider to be Kanawage Hrono, Kanyonke Haga, that live here, and those that do not have that, are not part of us, cannot be residents here. So, and in a sense, we've talked about at the table, we have to separate the issues. One is who is and who isn't. The other one is who can live here, because there's dynamics involved in that. And that's part of what we're before those two entities, the Human Rights Commission, as well as the courts of Quebec, Canada. The bottom line is, in the end, whatever happens, there's always going to be an enforceability side of it, and who's going to enforce that? Who's going to come and say to us, you now have to accept? I'm not predicting we're going to lose, but the cards are stacked against us right now.
The courts have not always been our friends.
They're not been our friends, so I don't see it. And if we lose, and I don't want to take it lightly, it may come down to the almighty dollar, who pays what, and whatever. But certainly courts have already said that in the past. They cannot turn non-Mohawks into Mohawks. And that's as simple as it is. So in that sense, that's where it's at, without getting into all the details, and not cause our legal department to lose some sleep.
You have to be careful about those things. Just getting back onto membership, because we haven't talked too much about it, but over the past couple of years, there was a movement to have actually a couple of private citizens put forth a proposal for a law to separate residency from membership, which actually makes a lot of sense. It will make both, I think, easier to administer. But the last community decision-making process meeting of the year was held just last week. This being the 3rd or 4th of December here. The last one was held last week. It was one of the best meetings we've ever had in terms of the level of discussion, the level of debate, and it seems to be moving forward and continuing to move forward. And it bodes well for answering some of the questions that, from what we can see in the human rights action that's being taken, some of that might actually address their concerns. It's really timing issues, because people haven't been, and that's a problem, people haven't, who are eligible to be either a resident or a member or a non-resident member, haven't been able to access that right based on the fact that Council of Elders has been suspended now for almost 8 years. So all of this has to happen, and it still continues to be complicated. So you get a sense that we're coming to some sort of close on this, or is it going to get worse before it gets better?
Well, quite honestly, Joe, I've said this in the past and I'll say it again. This issue will never go away. It'll always be a problem. But we want to put in things in place that will make it that much easier for future generations to define what their needs are, because it's not always going to be the same. What we have established today, in another generation or two generations from now, or three, it's not going to be the same. So we have to give them the tools and the opportunity to do what they need to do at that time. Coming back to today, we're at kind of a juncture, and in the last several years, with all this focus that's been placed on the issue, membership, residency, I find it's good. Some people say, "Oh, it's dreadful. It's terrible. It puts us in bad light and all of that." But for me, it needs to happen. You've got to do that. You've got to deal with those difficult situations and issues, and find a level of comfort anyway for now, knowing that it's going to change in the future, knowing that there are all kinds of things out there, landmines, if you will, such as courts and even internally the people themselves. But having the ability to discuss these publicly in forums such as CDMP and others, then it provides an outlet and it provides opportunities to say to people, I have a say and I matter in all of this, where I can go and I can talk and I can feel the comfort that's necessary in order to say, all right, we're setting the tone for the future. Taking care of something right now, we're the ones that have to take the beating, if you will, and that's fine. Don't mind doing that, as long as we know it's going to be easier for the future generations to be able to deal with this, you know. So it's a good time for a lot of people, and some it's not such a great time, you know, especially for those who are feeling the effects of it. But it does establish the benchmark that's always been, or reestablishes and re-recognizes the benchmark that's always been here, you know. If it's, no matter what anybody says, the courts or what have you, or those that feel victims of it, and those who've complained to and put false statements, you know, on record with the Canadian Human Rights Commission, the investigative part of it. I'm not really a fan of answering to anybody, but at the same time, if you can correct something, then take the opportunity to correct it. So this gives us the opportunity to do that.
All right. Well, obviously, you know, when you were last Grand Chief, we did the year in review, and membership was number one on the list. Maybe it's still number one.
It is.
All these years later, and it'll probably continue to be in the years to come. Just finally, on a much more local issue, we'll just finish up this time around, Tokwiru, with the issue on the 207. Martin Laborn was in here a couple of weeks ago talking about traffic sometimes being really horrible, other times not so bad, but some of the people in the area are getting frustrated. So Chief and Council did meet. You had Chief Peacekeeper was here, Ron Sky, Arnold Lazar. You had the various
Dave
players.
LaHache.
Dave LaHache was in here, who does a tremendous amount of work just on the traffic situation. So what can you tell us about what are the plans going to be, and how are we going to address these issues so that the people in the area don't feel abandoned?
Well, I think first and foremost, it began with a demand to shut the road down, 207, and to some degree OCR, from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. in the morning, or even extended to 9 a.m. And that would cause, but those who've been involved on the ground, shall we say, on a day-to-day basis, what's happened in the past, they've seen, all right, you close down those areas, and next thing you know, the focus goes somewhere else. Suddenly they're coming in, you know, on 132, they're coming in around, taking the shortcut by
Clay Mountains,
Kanawaki, going down in those areas, you know. And it takes the problem and goes elsewhere. So we've come up with a kind of way of continuing what's being done right now, monitoring of the traffic, but increasing the monitoring, making it more obvious that, you know, there's going to be controlling of the traffic so that our residents, our people, have more freedom, more flexibility to be able to come and go on 207, get their children to school, go to work, do all the things that they necessarily need to do. Controls traffic, it looks at truck traffic, all of those things that have been problems for everybody, that have been brought forth in the last month or so, are focused in on. And from what I understand, that there is a strong move, and that people are seeing the difference and feeling the difference. It's a matter of sustainability for a certain time period until summer months come along, you know, and things change at that time. But at this time period, though, there's going to continue to be an emphasis on the flow of traffic, the monitoring of it, and make sure that our people don't find themselves in an inconvenient situation every morning, you know.
Yeah, and I know one of the chiefs, I think it was Gus Nahua, mentioned that or suggested that the people in the area have actually a chance to meet and have a little forum where they can, blow off steam or come up with suggestions themselves, so that's probably going to be happening as well in the next few weeks.
Yeah, we haven't identified a date,
or anything like that. But there will be a meeting. I'm hoping it'll take place, you know, before Christmas. Inviting all the residents around 207, those who are most affected by, you know, the situation, to step forth and discuss what they think should be done, you know, to help alleviate the problems. But in the interim, the continued presence of peacekeepers on a morning basis, as much as possible, to create a better situation for traffic for our people, so that they can come and go more freely than they had in the past.
All right. Well, we've taken up an awful lot of your time already, so thanks so much for joining us. Yep, Grand Chief Joseph Tuquiro North.
This has been The Corner Office with political press attaché Joe Delarone and Grand Chief Joseph Tuquiro Norton.